Mr. Len Newman, Rail 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Newman?
I was born in Eastleigh in Hampshire at 10 o'clock on Sunday, the 4th of February 1923.
And could you tell me what your father did for a living?
He worked on railway works as a lock fitter.
And can you tell us a bit about your childhood, give us an idea about it?
I was an only child, and in those days Eastleigh was a small town which grew up around the railway. 90% of the people living there were railway workers. Just in the 1920s, Preddy's General moved in to the town to build cables, but it still remained a little community where everybody knew each other, and where there was a strong community feeling.
And how many were there in the family?
Just me.
And was it a comfortable upbringing? I mean, was your dad in steady employment with the rail?
We were poor, but we didn't realise it because everybody was in the same boat. Between the railway strike in 1929 and rearmament in 1937, my dad, although he was always employed, never worked more than 2 days a week. So money was always a bit scarce.
Did that affect like the way you were clothed and fed, or did your parents keep?
Oh, we always fed. We always fed well. My mum was a good housekeeper. In those days, they had to be. And we lived all right.
What about education?
I won a scholarship and went to grammar school. And I left for grammar school in 1939.
What about the grammar school? Any particular favourite subjects? Or any, you know, things you were interested in or
grammar
not?
Grammar schools in those days were a bit different schools these days. It was the first school I ever went to where I was taught. We had a different teacher for different subjects. In the ordinary schools, you had a form teacher, a class teacher, who taught you everything. And when I was in the elementary school, the elementary school, in my last year I had a teacher known to everybody as Dutchie. Don't know why, his name was Hood. And he was the most marvellous teacher we've ever had, I've ever had against. He made me interested in learning, rather than just going there to be taught. And without him, I wouldn't have passed the scholarship. When I got to grammar school, we were doing subjects I'd never even heard of before. In elementary school, we did arithmetic. In grammar school, we did maths. And I found I enjoyed them. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And I enjoyed my time at school. My favourite subject, I think, was history, really. Yeah, history. But I did enjoy my maths, I enjoyed my sciences. The only thing I didn't enjoy was French, which was a compulsory subject, because we had to have a subject for general school certificate. I had to have a language. General school stuff, yeah. But no, I didn't enjoy French. Everything else, yes.
What about sport? Much interest?
Play football in the school, play cricket in the school. Apart from that, no, not much.
Not outside?
Oh, played for, you know, everybody played. It was the only thing to do in the evening. No telly in those days. So you played games.
But you didn't play for a club, a local club?
When I left school, I played for the local Home Guard team. Until I went to the army.
I'll come back to that. What about any of the boys' societies at times? Boys' Brigade, Boys' Scouts, anything like that?
Never belonged to them.
Did you have any particular outside interests? You know, hobbies that you were really keen on?
I collected stamps. We all collected something. I collected stamps. Because of my mother, who was absolutely dead set on me not finishing up in railway works, I read and had the most Catholic taste in reading that you ever run up against. I'll read anything, source bottle labels, anything. And because of her, reading was my hobby.
Now, when you came to, you left school, there was no question, I presume, of further education of university or college? Or
yes, there would have been. I passed. I got my general school certificate with exemption from matriculation. And that was in, June 39, just before war started. Had it not been for war, I would probably have gone back to the sixth form and gone on to polytechnic, not university. University, state scholarships existed, but Hampshire didn't give many. But the headmaster at school could have fiddled me into the polytechnic, London polytechnic. But war came along, and I didn't.
Were you aware of what was going on in Germany, rise of Hitler, things like that? Did that get through to you? Is it something that would affect you, or was it just a backdrop?
In Eastleigh, where I lived, it did get through. Because everybody in Eastleigh was aware of it.
Why in particular?
Well, I don't want to bring politics into this particularly, but Eastleigh was a railway town, and consequently was solid labour. And consequently, everybody in Eastleigh knew of the atrocities, whatever, what call it what you will, being committed in Germany against left-wingers. A large number of people in Eastleigh, because unemployment, there was a lot of unemployment in Eastleigh, and a fair number of people actually went to Spain and fought in the Spanish Civil War.
Was your father involved in either Labour Party or unions?
Labour Party and unions, yes.
And did he bring you up in that way? I mean, were you?
Not particularly. No, he never forced anything onto me. But when you are brought up in that background, some is bound to rub off. So yes, not through him forcing me, but through general interest. Obviously, I grew up with some interest.
Did you join the Labour Party?
I joined it, but when I went into local government, mustn't be seen to be partial to it.
So, for this reason, as you said, you had an awareness of the threat from Hitler.
Yes.
And a very direct personal awareness. And what about that summer? You'd left school, or you had to leave school with the war coming up. Well, how did it all sort of pan out that summer, leading up to September and the declaration of war?
Well, we knew there was war coming before the declaration of war, and we had decided I would leave school before war was declared. But in those days, it was very difficult to get jobs. And I got my first job. I was turned down for a large number of jobs when I first left school. But on Monday, the 4th of September, five people came knocking at the door because they lost a lot of people who were caught up.
Right, I'll come back to that. What jobs had you gone looking for? Were you just looking for anything? Or
no, not really. I was looking for something where I could progress. In those days, clerical work was looked at as the peak of ambition. But I was also looking for something to do with electrical engineering.
So you were looking for that positions, clerical positions in engineering factories?
Yes, obviously. Yes.
And what about the Declaration of War? Do you remember it?
Yes, we listened to wireless. And within a few minutes of the war being declared, the air raid sirens went in London. We heard it on the radio.
And how did you feel? I mean, were you pleased or whatever?
Me? I don't know. I was excited, I think, more than anything else. I wasn't looking forward to it because I knew what the First World War was like because my father told me he was in it. Mum cried.
Now, you said the next day there were people at your door.
Yes, offering me work.
And what did you take?
I went to Preddy General.
Which is?
Cable Works. I went because it combined the two things, electrical engineering and clerical work.
And what could you sketch in what your job was? I mean,
they made telephone cables, and they had a department there testing the cables. I worked in that department doing testing the quality of the cables. I stayed there until I went into the army, and I took the ONC, Electrical Engineering, part-time study.
So that was a sort of thing. Did the war or famine, or it affected the work, because you'd got a job there, were there other effects of the war on the work of the factory?
It meant there was employment for everybody else as well. Nobody was able to work for me. The factory went from working general hours, you know, daytime only, to working three shifts, 24 hours a day. There was a lot more money floating around because of overtime. And there was a lot more experimental work being carried out.
Do you have any connection with any of that?
Only indirectly. While I was at Pelley's, the coaxial cable was introduced. It was unknown before, coax. And it was developed while I was actually at Pelley's, and I saw it being developed. I didn't have anything to do with actually developing it. I was a clerk. Yeah.
And what about things like the introduction of women? Was that done or resumed?
Women had always worked in factories in Eastleigh.
So it wasn't unusual at all. And what about yourself? I mean, you were young, 16 to 17, 18, rising up. Were you in 1940 when the phony war came to an end, were you involved in the Home Guard at all?
The Home Guard, as soon as it started.
So when it was the local defence volunteers? Yeah. Do you remember how you found out about it and where you went to go?
Yeah, it was announced on, once again, radio. It was announced on the radio. Somebody gave a broadcast, I can't remember who it was, gave a broadcast where intended to introduce the local defence volunteers and told us to go to the post office to enrol. We did. Accused of us.
And what type of, were they all young lads like yourself, or were they
all sorts?
Mixture of ages.
Really like Dad's Army. Really was like Dad's Army. People like myself, 16, 17, 18. Going through the people in the 60s, 70s, veterans from the First World War. One bloke in particular, a retired officer from the Indian Army, who liked Captain Mannering, just took over and ran it.
And what was the setup of your activities with the Home Guard? When would they meet?
Every night.
Every night?
Somebody had to meet every night, yeah. They got us organised into standing guard on civilian targets like the post office, the banks, things like that. And the Home Guard would report every night, even with their broomsticks before they had rifles, to stand guard over these buildings.
So, did you actually have sort of drill nights or training nights?
We had drill nights to start with. And then, as we got more arms, we had training nights as well, when we would learn more about different weapons. Actually, this became very useful, I'll tell you a bit later on, when I actually went into the army.
And so, what sort of training did they actually give you? I mean, you know, how far did they go into it?
Once they started issuing us with arms, the proper weapons, some of the weapons, although they were mainly from the First World War, were not necessarily British weapons. So we had weapons which the American forces had used in the First World War. Including the Browning machine guns, water cooled. They were very efficient, and we were trained in their use. We were actually formed into platoons, and this may seem daft, but trained in tactics.
What sort
mainly of based on the First World War, you know, salience and crossfire and things like that. But, and I don't know whether this applied to everywhere in the Home Guard. I think it was because of this old retired Indian Army officer. And he was very, very keen. and he gave us a very, very good tactical background, training background.
You do any live firing?
Oh yes. We had two weapons. We didn't have a Lee Enfield. We were issued with the old Ross rifle, a Canadian 3LO rifle, long-barreled and extremely accurate. Only a 5-round magazine, unlike the Enfield, but very, very good. Bolt action. And we also had the Browning automatic rifle, 25-round magazine, very heavy, but once again, extremely accurate and good rapid fire.
And where would you actually get a chance to fire them? Did they have a range near us?
Yes, we had ranges. We would go eight. Remember, there was a regular army at Winchester before the war, and we would go to the regular army ranges to pop off. Yeah.
And were you a good shot?
Then I was. I'm not now. My eyesight's gone.
And what about things like bayonet training?
He didn't believe in it. We did it. But this bloke didn't believe in it. He said, bayonets were one of the things that the regular army paid homage to. There's no use to anybody.
He actually said that?
Yeah. I gather that was a feeling of a lot of the First World War people. It was a waste of time.
What about hand grenades? Yeah.
We didn't have many, and we couldn't waste them. So when we threw them, they were dummies. But we knew how they worked, and we had a few.
So you practiced a round arm throwing?
Yeah.
What about mortars? I just suppose, did you see?
Black bombard. We didn't have a mortar, we had a black bombard.
What was that? I mean, it's not that well known a weapon, though.
No, it was a funny sort of thing. It was like. excuse me. It was a sort of wheeled gun. But when you wanted to use it, you tipped it over on one wheel, which formed a base for it to fire on. And the other wheel just tipped over in front to form a guard. And it fired a mortar shell.
What was it like to fire?
I don't know. It was no bother to fire, but how effective it was, I don't know. I don't imagine it would have been very effective.
And any other weapons, or any improvised weapons?
Oh, we had the Molotov cocktails. We spent days making those. Petrol into beer bottles. Cork shoved in with a bit of rag through the cork.
And did you actually ever throw one?
No. Never. We had hundreds of them stored just in case.
So you'd have this training, and how many nights a week was the training? Was it just at the start?
Well, we wanted you to turn up at least two nights every week, but most of us were keen and we turned up nearly every night because it was left to us how often we turned up. There was something going on every night. So.
What about camps or exercises?
We had our work. So we had exercise at weekends.
What would you do then? This is a tactical training you were talking about, was it?
In some cases, one case I remember particularly, the regular army attacked the village just north of Eastleigh, Borbrook, and it was up to us to defend it.
What do you remember of that then?
The regular army came along and they thought this was going to be our day out. Unfortunately, we took it very seriously. Because we were doing it for fun. Not for fun, we were doing it because we volunteered to do it. They were doing it because it was just a job to them. And we hammered them.
Well, how did you hammer them? I mean,
well, we used potatoes instead of grenades. And we got quite a lot of great hits. And we, as I said, we were doing it for... Seriously, we thought we were doing something good, and we were stuck up the trees and dropping on top of them. Boots first. They weren't expecting it. When they turned round and the last bloke was there, wasn't there anymore.
So you're quite violent.
Oh, yeah. We were told where we were going to be, only we got in first.
Anything else about it?
Not really. I got interested in...
Doesn't sound very realistic as an exercise.
It wasn't, not really.
I mean, dropping out of trees and things.
Oh, no, but I mean, it wasn't very realistic, but it was left to us how we did it. And we were told that the regular army were going to come and attack us. No, it wasn't very realistic. But we were also told that it was up to us to put one over on the regular army, and so we did.
Now, anything else, any other exercise or tactical things you did?
A great deal of it was up to us. The training was there for us, if we wanted to do it. So if people were particularly interested in map reading, there would always be somebody there to teach them. If somebody else was interested in the work of the medical corps, in the regular army, or the service corps, or the way, a word which wasn't used in those days, logistics, the way that the services, both the fighting units, were serviced. There was always something there to teach them, if they were really interested.
Was this form courses then that you could do, or was it just train, you know?
It was a training. But it was there if we wanted it. It wasn't something we were made to do.
And what about the actual guard work you did? Could you tell us a bit about that? On leave?
To start with, it kept us busy, but it wasn't very effective. Not really. I mean, somebody standing there with a broomstick in front of a post office wouldn't have stopped anybody. Not really. But we were keen.
Were you guarding the factories?
No, most of the factories have their own home guardians.
So you were, as you said, the civilian points of thing, like post office and...
The home guardians in the factories were part of our organisation.
You were the Eastleigh Home Guard, or Eastleigh Local Defence Body.
But the people in the railway works were also part of the Eastleigh Home Guard, but they happened to work in the railway works.
And they had their own platoon?
Yeah, that's right.
And any other training or duties you had with them? Because you were with them for a while, weren't you?
Yeah. The point was, it was voluntary. And that is the thing that a lot of people do forget. It was voluntary. And then in 1941, nearly 18 months after the Home Guard formed, I suddenly found out little girls were different little boys. And got interested and met my wife. And that took my interest away from Home Guard.
So you stopped, or did you...?
No, it stopped completely. But it slowed down because it had become obvious that there wasn't going to be an invasion. And so a lot of people did lose... Remember, we joined because there was an imminent threat that of an invasion. That threat had gone. And a lot of people thought the Home Guard were becoming less important.
And that was around about 1941.
Yeah. Then, of course, Southampton got bombed. And the Home Guard then got involved again. By that time, we had rifles, and we went into Southampton to protect. And, you know, I'd hate to say looting, but to prevent anything like that happening and to assist the regular services.
Was there much evidence or intent of looting?
No, not really.
So it's a precaution?
Really, yes.
So what were you doing in South Africa? I mean, how did you go about it?
It's very difficult to explain this. If you haven't seen the Blitz, it's very difficult to explain. You get whole streets on fire. The ambulance are there. The air raid precaution people, rescue people were there. Regular services there. But they never had enough helpers. And so we just went in and helped wherever we could.
So you
we would be digging. We could be digging people out. We could be helping the fire services, putting fires out. We could be helping the police and directing traffic. We did everything we could to help all the other services.
So the reason you were sent was for anti-looting, but when you got there,
We were doing everything we could to help everybody else.
Does any particular things you remember of that time?
Nothing to do with things we did, but the thing I always remember was seeing a house down by Southampton Railway Station, standing there, one wall with one floor just sticking out like that, nothing else. And on that floor was a bed, a wardrobe, a dressing table, and the bed looked as though somebody just climbed out of it. Nothing damaged, except there was nothing around it, no house around it. Just the honest part.
And so any other duties you were given during that period? So you got you'd lost interest a bit, but did this make you come back to it?
It's not fair to say we lost interest. We'd lost interest in the original reason for the formation, the threat of invasion of Don.
So the bombing starting
gave us a different interest. But that only happened when the bombing happened. I mean, that's really let alone that on nights we didn't have bombing, well, we didn't have so much duty. There was one case in Eastleigh where a Lockheed Hudson crashed in the town, brought down by a barrage field wire. There we were the first people there, we were there before anybody else. And we managed to get a couple of, not me personally, but we managed to leave, oh God. Got the people in the house that hit, and one ended through pilots and navigators, they were killed. But we helped to get the people in the house where it hit before we got injured.
You must have seen, if you were involved in after the Blitz, it's some pretty awful sights as well. I mean, you were only young, even you know. Did it affect you badly?
Now you hear a lot about stress counselling and things like that. We never heard of stress, never mind counselling.
So anything you saw, you took as it was?
Yeah, I think most people did. And I think most people would. If they weren't told they were going to be stressed. Even now. Nothing to do with stress or anything like that. But when I was working in Liverpool, I always remember a coloured lad saying to me, you know, I never realised we were discriminating against until a social worker told me. That's fine. You don't know. I don't think you realise you're stressed until somebody told you. And in those days, nobody told you.